Visit our website at wortfm.org/programming-committee, or you can email me directly with j.davis@wortfm.org, and we can start the conversation.
WORT, where your voice matters.
You're listening to WRT Madison. I'm your host, Lauren Hicks, and this is the Perpetual Notion Machine. Spring has just sprung, and you may have broken out some gardening tools. Maybe you're considering planting some tomatoes. But what if you could also grow those tomatoes in space? That's what our guest tonight researches, space tomatoes, specifically how tomatoes cope in stressful environments, like space. With me tonight is Dr. Simon Gilroy. He is a professor at UW-Madison of botany, where he researches how plants sense and respond to their environment and how those signals regulate plant development. He's the head of his own lab, the Gilroy Life Science Lab, which tries to understand the root of these processes on a cellular level. Hello, Dr. Gilroy, and welcome to the Perpetual Notion Machine.
Oh, thanks for the invitation to come and talk.
I'm really glad you're here. So you're currently running an experiment in collaboration with NASA to see how tomatoes cope with spaceflight. It's called TASTY, short for Trichoderma Associated Space Tomato Inoculation Experiment. So tell us about this experiment.
Yeah, so space is a strange place for all biology to go, not just plants, but, you know, the astronauts are up there. Biology has had millions of years to get really, really good at living on Earth, and has only had maybe 60 years to move out into space. And so we're interested in trying to understand how biology interacts in that weird, weird place, the weightless environment, there's increased radiation, you're outside the atmosphere and the protection of the Earth, and so what happens there? And we're interested in how that happens for astronauts, but one of the things that we'd like to be able to do is to grow plants for very long-term missions. So now we're thinking in the realms of, you've probably seen the movie The Martian.
Yeah.
Where we're moving into that kind of area where it's actually very, very difficult to feed someone and keep them healthy, especially when we start to talk about what happens in space, for really long durations. And so one of the goals is, can you keep people alive and healthy in space the way we do on Earth? And if you think about it, pretty much everything that you eat has some plant origin. Even if you go back to like a beef burger, that used to be a cow, and that cow used to be the grass that it was eating. So plants are kind of the basis of the ecology that we work with, and so we would like to work out whether we can take that into space. But space is this weird place. How do plants grow when there's no gravity? How do plants grow when there's increased radiation? And we know that plants are amazing. Plants cope.
Yeah.
Plants grow in space, and they grow okay. But they obviously are a little bit stressed out. And so the TASTY experiment is to ask, what happens to tomato plants when we grow them in space? And then, can we use what we know about the ecology of how plants grow on Earth to maybe help them a little bit? And so on Earth, plants don't grow on their own. If you think about the soil is teeming with microbes.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out there's a lot of beneficial ones in there. And there's one specific fungus called Trichoderma haasianum. It's just a generic prevalent soil fungus. And on Earth, when you grow plants with that fungus, they're bigger, better, stronger. You know, that interaction helps the plant to fend off pathogens, to grow bigger, to be more nutritious. And so TASTY is really asking, if we take that interaction and move it into space, does the fungus help the plant cope with the stresses of being in space?
Is the fungus benefiting at all from this?
Yeah, I mean, it's a two-way street.
Right.
What plants are really, really good at doing is making sugar. They do photosynthesis, mm-hmm. and they build stuff out of sugars. And they're so good at it that it's kind of a currency that they can use to spend on other things. And one of the things that they're going to spend it on is paying this fungus to do the beneficial things that the fungus does. So it's totally a two-way street.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Nice of them to do that.
Yeah.
What are some of the obstacles, though, that the tomatoes or plants in general that they have to deal with if they're not being grown on, like, Earth?
Yeah.
You said gravity and radiation. Can you get into that?
Yeah. So I guess by definition, things you take for granted, you don't think about. And there's a lot of living on Earth that we take for granted, and it's going to be removed when we, or changed when we go into space. So the most obvious one is gravity. So you're in a weightless environment when you go into space. And I always go, I think everyone who's listening can think of some of the things that they would expect that would happen to them when you go into space. So if you don't weigh anything, I mean, it's pretty awesome. You can float around like you see all the astronauts doing. But on Earth, your muscles and your bones are fighting against the force of gravity because you weigh something. And that makes you work the way you do. So I'm going to remove that. And so if you think, well, what would happen? This totally happens to the astronauts. They lose bone mass and muscle mass because they're not constantly fighting against gravity. We have a Don Pettit, one of the astronauts, just said, biology gets lazy in space. Same deal is going to happen with plants. So plants have the same issues of they weigh something and they have to fight against gravity, and they make wood and all those strengthening things that make them strong as plants. And they're not going to do that in space. But then there's a whole suite of other things, which I always also think, if I tell you what happens in space, you'll go like, oh, yeah. But they're not the things like, oh, you're going to lose bone mass. They're not the obvious ones. But when you know about them, they make perfect sense.
Right.
So if you go into a weightless environment, water moves in a different way from the way it does on Earth.
How does it move?
So think of water just... put a mental picture in your mind of flowing water.
Okay, I have it.
Anyway, and it, unless it is a hose pipe, it's probably going to be a river or the oceans or something, the waves or something like that. That's all being driven by gravity. That movement of water is totally being pulled down by gravity. Think of a watering can and you tip it on its side, or a cup and you tip it on its side and the water flows out. The water is being pulled out by gravity. So now we move into space, and that force that is just, you don't even think about it, it just dominates how water moves around on Earth, we're going to remove that. So if I take that glass and I tip it on its side, nothing's going to come out. The water is just going to stay stuck in the glass. But there are forces that do move water around, but they get down to like the molecular structure of water. And so water in space becomes sticky and creepy.
Okay.
So it's going to want to stick to things.
Okay.
And if it can stick to something because the surface is like wettable, you know, so like your hand, for instance, the water would stick to your hand.
Okay.
But then it would start to creep along the surface of your hand.
Oh.
So that's driven by the molecular forces of capillary action. So water kind of makes gloves in space.
Oh.
It's very weird. And if you were then, you got this glove of water on your hand and you were to touch something, whatever you touch would want to stick to your hand now by the glue of the water.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. So this is one of the big deals for space flight and plants. And it's actually one of the things that we don't really know how to do very well. Simplest thing on Earth. If you're a gardener, you're going to water your plants.
Exactly, yeah.
How do you water your plants in space?
Yeah.
Because you can't use your watering can.
You can't, like, drop it in. So
we tend to use pumps.
Okay.
Pumps are very complicated things in space, but a great way to think about it, and is actually truly used by the astronauts in space, big syringes.
Ooh.
You can just force the water to move, right? You're pumping it with pressure. But now some weird stuff's going to happen. So if you pump the water really quickly... and let's say that you've got a plant which is growing in like clay pebbles, right? Which is kind of how we grow a lot of plants in space, sort of under a hydroponic system. If you squirt the water really fast, on Earth, it would just hit those clay pebbles and like spurt around and then like soak into the pebbles. But in space, it'll actually bounce off the surface of the pebble. It's kind of weird to think about.
Yeah, like a little ricochet.
Yeah, so it comes straight back at you. Well, but so do it slowly. The water will hit the pebbles. And think of a root system also growing through those pebbles. The water will stick to the pebbles. Because remember, creepy and sticky.
Yeah.
So it will stick to the pebbles and will creep over the surface of them.
Okay.
And then it will move to the next pebble and the next pebble. Eventually, it will get to the root. And now... the surface of the root, water can totally stick to that. So if you add just a little bit too much water, and everyone who has houseplants knows you always overwater your plants. It's just like that's part of having plants. Eh? So a little bit too much water, it will stick to the surface of the root and will creep up the root. Right? So now you've got a root with like a glove of water over it. And if you think on earth, is there anything like that? That's kind of like, you know, if you're a farmer and your field floods and the soil is now full of water, it's a little bit like that. Right? And plants don't like that at all.
Yeah, no.
But also, you've still got excess water around. The water will now creep up the stem of the plant, make a glove on the stem, and then creep over the leaves. And so if you have too much water, you can end up with a plant that is encased in water.
Yeah.
Which is a very strange place to put a plant. That is very, very much like being flooded on earth if you're a plant. And it's also a great breeding ground for pathogens like fungi and bacteria. So if you add a little bit too much water, plants just are really super unhappy in space. But it's because you're kind of like, you're a bad gardener. You're not adding the right amount of water.
Yeah.
And it's very, very, very difficult to get the right amount of water.
Could they ever like remove some of the water if it were to be too much? Or is that...
Yeah, and so this is the balance that we all play as space scientists. So there's two ways to think about it when you're thinking of biology. You can think about the crew, you can think about plants, you can think about microbes growing in space. Right? So there's the biological solutions to the problems of being in space, and there's the engineering solutions, and both of those go hand in hand.
Mm-hmm.
So an engineering solution would be, let's just monitor how much water very, very closely and add the right amount. And have the engineering solution to suck water out. And that is a great way to go. But in tandem with that, there's the biological approach, which is to say, well, if in space plants think that they are flooded, how do plants respond to being flooded on Earth? And can we do some biological manipulations? Can we find plants that are really happy in those conditions? And maybe those are going to be the great crops that you grow in space. Or maybe we could engineer a plant with some trait, breed a trait into it, which allows, like, maybe we can make flood resistant tomato plants.
Right.
And those would be way better at growing in space.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, is that, do you feel like you get that benefit by being working with like engineers at NASA and then being in your lab, being all botanists and being scientists in that aspect? Do you find like that's the best way of it?
Absolutely. Because you feed off each other, and the insights, engineers think in a different way from biologists,
right?
And the problem solving suite of tools is different.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can put them together, you can, it just works fantastically well. Yeah. And you hear about problems and issues that each of you wouldn't know about if you didn't talk to the others. That's why space scientists is we have fantastic professional meetings, because we have people who build satellites talking to people who grow tomatoes. And at that interface, you get some really crazy ideas that come out.
I can imagine that. Yeah. I feel like that's like the best kind of thing to sit in on. So the plants itself, how are they not moving around? That's the one thing that's tripping me up a little bit.
It's a little less high tech than you would imagine, because if we have a pot and we put clay pebbles in it, or the way that we grow the plants is we have a nutrient gel, but it's just sitting there, and you push a seed onto that, it will stick to it and the seed isn't going to go anywhere. And then the way that most people do their space plant biology is you send up ungerminated seeds and you actually grow the whole life cycle of the plant in space. So it's going to be stuck on the top of the pot, or it's going to be stuck to the gel. It's going to make roots. Roots are fantastically good at growing through things and grabbing hold of them. And so they just end up stuck in the pot or stuck to the surface of the gel. And then we have really good growth chambers. So you can imagine what does a greenhouse look like in space?
Yeah.
Do they even have a greenhouse on the space station? Well, what we have are growth chambers. And the way to visualize them, think of a cube about 2 feet by 2 feet by 2 feet, that kind of size.
Mm-hmm.
And then think of it as a box, and then make the top of it a lot of LED lights, and those are your grow lights.
Okay.
And then put some fans in, and the fans turn out to be fantastically important. But that's basically the kind of volume and the kind of growth chamber that we have. And then Velcro is your friend. If you have a pot,
I love Velcro.
Stick some Velcro on the bottom of the pot, stick the pot down onto the Velcro in the bottom of the growth chamber. The astronauts on their clothing have little strips of Velcro because, you know, they've got these tools and things they're working with, and they just like stick them to the Velcro. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. That's, man, I feel like if you tell the inventor of Velcro, he'd be very pleased with himself about that, because that is, Velcro's, you can use it for everything.
Yeah.
This is your sixth plant expedition into space.
Yeah.
You've been doing this for more than a decade. What other plants have you like tested the effects of space on?
So there is this lab rat of plant biology.
Mm-hmm.
It's a plant called Arabidopsis. And a good few decades ago, plant biologists all got together and just said, you know, if we're going to make real progress, if we all worked on one plant, maybe we could make a big body of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And so this Arabidopsis is that plant.
Okay.
And so we have lots of molecular tools and lots of analyses we can do with it. So we've used that in many of the experiments. And other plant biologists who fly plants and grow them on the space station also use that for that reason, that we want to get a big body of knowledge together. But, I mean, it's kind of like a weed. It's not the most inspiring of plants to grow up there, but it's super useful at the level of science. But the other plant that we have grown up there is actually cotton.
Cotton? Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
And what that let us do is, cotton is a very, very different plant. It's very different from tomatoes, and it's very, very different from this weed, Arabidopsis. And so what we're interested in is what's common between all of those three different kinds of plants, because if we find them doing, they're very different plants, but they all do the same thing, maybe that tells us some very fundamental feature of what it means to grow in space.
Have you gotten any conclusions from that so far?
Yeah. There are some things where you just go like, I would never have guessed it. But this is kind of a bit of what it is like being a plant in space. So one of the things that seems to be disrupted makes perfect sense, which is that there are changes in plant cells have rigid walls around them that mm-hmm. make up the structure of the plant. And they're the rigidity of a lot of plants. That gets changed.
Oh.
Probably because the plants don't weigh anything, and so they don't have to make the same kind of support structures. And that seems a very generic thing that all plants do. But then there are some ones where you're like, oh, I might not have guessed this, but this is what happens. So one of them is that plants show a disruption in the pathways that they lead to defense.
Oh.
So plants have an immune system, like, not like ours, but it does the same thing. You know, a bacterial pathogen comes along, a plant can fight off that bacterial pathogen. That pathway looks like it might be disrupted in spaceflight. We're not certain why. If it is, it becomes a big deal for thinking about using plants to feed astronauts, because you want the plants to defend themselves well while they're growing in space.
Yeah.
Because space flight, there's two visions out there in like sci-fi world of what space flight is like. There's the Star Trek world, which is all very clean and beautiful, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the Star Wars trash compactor, pretty grimy world. It's not the trash compactor world, but it's way more grimy than you think it should be. And a way to think about what the space station is like. So the space station has been up there for decades. It's had six people living in it, effectively constantly, six or seven people.
Wow.
It's about the size of a 5-6-bedroom house.
Okay.
So now, picture yourself, five of your friends, and we're going to lock you in a house for a couple of decades.
Okay.
And it's going to be really hard for you to clean. Because, you know, vacuum cleaner is probably not going to work very well. You can't spray bleach or anything like that around. Mm-hmm. You're going to spend a lot of time wiping things down to clean it. But you've put people up there, and we human beings, we are pretty dirty.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a lot of microbes that come with us. And there's been lots and lots of crew changeovers. So the space station is maintained really well, but as far as microbes are concerned, it's incredibly rich in a microbial population just because there's been lots of people who've been up there.
Is that affecting any of the growth rates for the plants?
I don't think that we know. What we do know is that occasionally plants have shown symptoms of being attacked. And again, this might just be that we have not yet learnt how to be great gardeners in space.
Mm-hmm.
And imagine that you had a greenhouse and you just weren't very good at gardening and you didn't know all of the ways to treat your plants and all of the ways to cosset them and how much to water them so that the plants were kind of stressed out. On Earth, you would probably end up with plants which were attacked by pathogens more than they are on in other people's greenhouses. And so that may be a large part of what it means to be in space at the moment, is that we're still trying to learn all of the horticulture because it's all a little bit different when you go into space.
Right. So this experiment, it launched back at the end of January.
Yep.
So how long were these tomatoes in space for?
So we send them up as seeds, mm-hmm. and then they get pulled out and put into one of these growth chambers. And we actually want to work very quickly. We want to do a seedling establishment experiment because a lot of the interesting interactions that this beneficial fungus and the plant does, they all play out in the first 2 or 3 weeks of life.
Oh, really?
So we grew the plants for about 2 weeks, and then at the end of it, the astronauts harvest them. So they basically they open up the dishes that the plants are growing in, and then there's a minus 80 freezer on the space station.
Oh, wow.
There's a minus 160 freezer on the space station. So we can take our samples and we rapidly freeze them.
Mm-hmm.
And then those frozen samples are what get sent back to Earth. And they come back down frozen. And actually, literally yesterday, a huge truck arrives at the university and they break the seal on the back and mm-hmm. there are the boxes with our samples in there. And then we take those samples and they immediately go into a minus 80 degree freezer. And they're sitting in that freezer at the moment. And we will start doing our analyses on them, you know, in the next few days.
Did you take a peek? Like, what do they look like?
We did better than take a peek because the astronauts are really good photographers.
Oh,
and so they took photographs of them every other day throughout their entire growth.
Oh,
so we
okay.
have like the little movie of them growing.
Oh, okay.
And like I say, plants are amazing. Plants are incredibly resilient.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you think of how much we all abuse our houseplants and they still grow and are alive.
Yeah, my plant is not happy with me right now.
Yeah.
I forgot to open the blinds, so yeah. It's not doing well. But
so the tomato plants in space, they are growing. They grew okay.
Okay.
And the thing which is really obvious is that the shoot systems grow pretty much like they would on Earth, but they've got this huge light cap that they're growing towards.
Hmm.
So all the LED lights are allowing the shoots to know where the light is and grow effectively up towards mm-hmm. the light, even though there's no up or down.
Okay.
The root systems are way wacky because they're growing in very random patterns.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
because they don't know down. Because there's no gravity.
Yeah. And okay. so they just sort of grow and they wander. And we have at Kennedy Space Center, we have a growth chamber, which is the exact duplicate of the one in space.
Oh,
it's just
so cool.
on the ground. And so we grow the same plants at the same time on Earth because we want to make a comparison.
Yeah.
And the plants growing on Earth, the roots do exactly what you'd expect. They go straight down. And we compare those with the ones in space where they're all like curling and going sideways. And we're literally just at the beginning of doing this, of going like, well, what's the difference? And does that tell us something about what it means to sort of develop during space flight?
Right. That's really awesome. Yeah. I mean, it makes sense too, because you're having the lights above so they know where like up virtually is.
Yeah.
But the down part for gravity, they don't have that. So that's why they're all wonky.
Yeah.
That's really fascinating. So did you ever think that you would be growing tomatoes in space when you were younger? How did you get into studying this?
So space is cool.
Yes.
And growing up, it wasn't like space wasn't cool. I loved rockets and all of that kind of stuff. But then, from all of my research career, I've been student plant biologist, not really with any spacey stuff going on for a really long time. But the questions that I'm fascinated in and the group that I work with, like I'm really the front man for all of the really talented people in the lab. Everyone is interested in how plants sense what's going on around them, and then do the right thing, because they always do the right thing. And then, especially with stressful environments like drought or flooding, how does that work? And so this is the great thing of that whole thing of, like, you hang out with people who have different expertise from you, and suddenly you hear a different story. So we work on flooding and how plants respond to flooding.
Mm-hmm.
And then we hang out with the spaceflight people who can tell you plants probably think they're flooded when they're in space. And the thing that got us to begin to launch stuff into space was just taking those two things and putting them together. We kind of think we have a little bit of an insight into how plants deal with flooding. That means that maybe we can have a little bit of insight how to design a plant that will work better in space.
Hmm.
Yeah,
that's really awesome. So what do you think this would mean for, like, the future of space exploration? Do you think we'd have, like, longer flights if we can grow our own food? No?
Yeah, I think that's the goal.
That's the goal.
We're a long way from the fields of space plants that you see in sci-fi movies that feed the astronauts with everything that they need. But mm-hmm. we're slowly taking, like, tiny steps towards that. But there is one big thing that we know that plants give you when you go into space. Space is a very built environment. It's a very artificial engineered environment because you're in a spacecraft. And if you think of being on the space station, you're looking at the Earth, but you can't get there.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's very stressful, and it's not an easy place to be a human being. But having a plant that you're growing turns out psychologically to be enormously beneficial.
Oh, that's nice.
And so it's just what a lot of us know is that just tending for plants is a great thing to do for your own, like, psychological well-being.
Yeah, yeah. I like that. We're almost out of time, but before we go, where can people learn more about your research?
So we have a website which has a lot of information about what we do. One of the undergraduates in the lab runs a website called astrobotany.com, which has a lot of background information, a lot of ways of thinking about how plants work in space. And we will be at science expeditions with lots of spacey stuff just coming up at the beginning of April.
Okay, perfect. We'll definitely add that in the article. We'll also link all of your stuff there. So if you are going to be checking this out, go to WORTFM.org and you'll be able to catch out more information there. And it is about 7:28 right now, and that's all the time we have for tonight. We've been talking with Dr. Simon Gilroy, who is a professor at UW-Madison and a collaborator with NASA, who is currently conducting research on how tomato plants grow in space. Dr. Gilroy, thank you so much for joining us here tonight.
It's my pleasure.
And that does it for the Perpetual Notion Machine, our weekly science news show here on community radio station WORT Madison. I've been your host, Lauren Hicks, and coming up next, we're going to have radio literature with Melvin Hinton. Thank you so much for joining us here tonight.
Looking for more ways to get involved with WORT? WORT's Community Advisory Board, or CAB, is looking for new members who reflect the diverse needs and interests of the listening audience. The CAB provides input to the WORT Board of Directors as to how the station's programming and policies address community needs. The CAB meets at least 6 times per year, and members also help with many events, such as pledge drives, outreach, and fundraising. CAB members cannot be a regularly scheduled station volunteer.
Generally, CAB meetings are held virtually on Google Meet. More information and an online application to the Community Advisory Board are available on our website at WORTFM.org by clicking on the Join the CAB button on the left side of the page.
Any questions about the CAB can be directed to the WORT Volunteer Coordinator at 608-256-2001 and ask for Adrian.
The CAB is meant to reflect all of WORT's listening audience. Members of underrepresented groups of all ages are encouraged to apply. WORT is an equal opportunity affirmative action organization.
Welcome to Radio Literature, Madison's weekly look at poetry, fiction, nonfiction, theater, and experimental writing for readers of all ages. Settle in for a half hour of conversation on radio literature. Here's your host, Melvin Hinton.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Radio Literature. Because it is Thursday at 7:30 Central Time here in Madison, Wisconsin. And we have a special guest, Charles Edward Payne. Are you known, do you prefer to be known professionally as Charles Payne or Charles Edward Payne?
Charles Payne is fine.
Charles Payne, okay. Mm-hmm. Charles Payne is a poet, a playwright, an essayist, a teacher, and I just found out today that he's a poet. I didn't even realize he was a poet until today, and I just found out he's other things as well, but maybe we'll go into that later. So, Charles Payne, well, I first discovered you, and I feel as if I have discovered a treasure in reading your essays on the back page of the last page of the Isthmus. I have a note here that says Charles Payne is a Wisconsin transplant. Where were you transplanted from?
I would say a little bit everywhere, but my family's from Detroit.